We'll call the Senate Tax Committee to order for whatever day of the week it is, April 3rd, 2014. Senator Tomasoni, Senate File 2919.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Mr. Chairman, I think I have an amendment that I need to put on the bill just to put it in shape.
Senator Tomasoni, first stop.
Yes.
Senator Tomasoni has an author's amendment to A1. Senator Rest moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Amendment's adopted. Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think this is very complicated. What we're trying to do here is there's two types of minerals on the Iron Range. One is ferrous and one is non-ferrous. The ferrous minerals are what you refer to as taconite, or you would understand as taconite. The non-ferrous would be the metals that we haven't mined yet and are hoping to mine in the future. But there's a distribution in statute for the non-ferrous minerals, just as there is for the ferrous minerals. And so, but there's a little bit of difference in how they're distributed. So what this bill attempts to do is to distribute the proceeds from the non-ferrous minerals, should they be mined in the not-too-distant future, in the same way that the ferrous minerals or ferrous proceeds are being distributed. And I think that's really the crux of the bill. Where you see those changes is on page 2 and page 3, where you see the underlying language that is moving, making sure that there's distributions where there's not only mining but also concentrating. And so that's consistent with how we distribute the proceeds of the ferrous minerals. So that's kind of the crux of the bill. There's a little change on line 3.30 and 3.30 and 3.31 as to the distribution to the Douglas J. Johnson Fund. That's consistent with taconite taxes also, so that there's a one-third, two-thirds distribution, just as in the taconite tax. So,
Mr. Chairman, could you ask Senator Tomasoni to bring the mic a little bit closer so that we could hear your mumbling clearer?
I thought I was speaking very clearly, honest to God, because I actually kind of know this stuff.
Senator Tomasoni.
So do you want me to repeat all that, Senator Rest?
No.
I can, but the bill is an attempt to conform the non-ferrous distribution to the ferrous distribution. That's what we're trying to do.
So. And Senator Tomasoni, the two provisions that I'm most curious about is the school district provision. This is a continuation of the initiative that we've been talking about with the co-location of the school districts. It's on page 4 and 5.
Do you see a reference to it somewhere?
School districts. It's on page 4, line 30, through page 5, line
6. And Mr. Chairman,
About redistribution to school districts, 32.15 cents to 33.5 cents.
And maybe staff can help me with that, but I think that's just conforming with the bill that we passed earlier this session, if I'm not mistaken.
Mr. Sylvia.
Mr. Chair, in Section 5 of the bill, this is dealing with the taconite production tax, and you'll notice on lines 5.3, 5.7, and 5.28, we're increasing the distribution of the tax to three particular school funds, those being the taconite school fund, the general school fund, and the building and maintenance fund, and that is what's happening in Section 5 with the taconite production tax.
Mr. Sylvia, is that connected to the work that we did earlier in the earlier tax bill for those school districts that are doing the co-location?
Mr. Chair and members, it may possibly trickle down, but it's not specific to those particular school districts. These are for particular school funds, which I think are then reallocated. But this would be increasing the distribution to those particular funds.
Okay. And Senator Tomasoni, Section 6, the County Road and Bridge Fund increase.
Here again, Mr. Chairman, I believe Mr. Sylvia explained to me that this is a conforming to the previous tax bill that we passed this session, but he can explain it better if I'm not understanding that correctly.
Mr. Sylvia.
Mr. Chair and members, in Section 6 is now Section 5 with the delete all amendment because we actually deleted a section. So I will discuss the A1 amendment, which contains the new county section. And what we're doing in lines 1.18 is we're increasing by a small amount the distribution of the taconite production tax to the County Road and Bridge Fund. The change that's made in line 1.6 is just a conforming change. The first tax bill that we passed a few weeks ago contained the same section. In that bill, we reduced the distribution to the regular counties by 5 cents, so we then had to make a corresponding change in line 1.6, and that is reflecting the work that was done and passed in the tax bill a few weeks ago.
Thank you, Mr. Sylvia. Any other questions? Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, I don't have any problems with the later sections in the bill. My question is about the first two sections, which I think the occupation tax, that's the one that goes to the state, and the net proceeds is the one that goes to local governments. Is that correct?
That's correct, Senator Marty. I think the occupation tax comes into the general fund and
Mr. Chair, then I guess I'm wondering why we're doing this now, because as the fiscal note says, that there's no money coming into this now, and I think everybody recognizes there may be some in the next few years. And it's kind of like there's a box of pool of money, and some of it's coming to the state and some of it's coming to the local government, and I don't know who set those numbers years ago, but now we're saying we're going to take more of it out of the state one and put it in the local one. And don't worry, there's no money in the box, so we're not doing anything significant. But everybody's expecting there may well be money in that box, and I guess I'm curious how much money this is, and why are we doing this? Why are we trying to do this year when there's no money in the box?
Senator Tomsoni.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Marty, that's a good question, and I my understanding of why we did this is because this is a new industry, and to get them going out of the box and to try and hold down taxes so that the industry can get through the first couple of years is the best explanation I can give you. And I'm other than that, I can't give you anything else, because the industry itself is saying that there could be some difficult times in the beginning, and to make sure that they make some money, they want to make sure that this isn't an overly undue burden on them.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Marty.
But this isn't changing the amount they're paying, is it? It's just changing who's getting it.
Well, if you're looking at line 1.19, I think that changes the income tax rate, which is what the occupation tax is. So are you looking at something else?
I was reading the bill summary from Senate Counsel, and it sounds like the one tax is going up by 1% and the other one's going down by 1%. And I'm not sure how that impacts with the new Section 5.
Senator Tomasoni, I think that the point Senator Marty is making is that there is a 1% reduction in the tax, the occupation tax on Section 1, and a 1% increase
Section 2
on the net proceeds tax in Section 2, thinking that the total taxes paid would balance out. It's just a redistribution of where it goes. Senator Tomasoni.
Yeah, I believe that's true.
Well, members, we'll lay this over. Perhaps this is something we'll work with Senator Tomasoni on before it would move forward in the tax bill.
And
Senator Tomasoni.
And that's one of those things that when we talk to the industry, they also were okay with it, because it's a, I guess to them it's a wash, but it is also an attempt by the area to make sure that the mining proceeds do go a little bit more to the area, because that's where the impact is. And so,
Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say that I have a concern with less of the money going to the general fund, since at this time there's a lot of concerns about additional cost to taxpayers as a result of this form of mining. So I would hope that we'd look at this really closely.
Thank you. Senator Eaton. Senator Marty again.
Mr. Chair, that was about the same point, is that we don't know the costs of everything here. And again, I don't think this changes with the mining industry would be paying. It just depends who gets it, and when we don't know what's in the box, how much we're shifting to everybody. It just seems to be not the right time to be making those decisions. But.
Noted. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. excuse me, a little bit to that point. Is there a way to get some sort of estimate on what the net impact would be to the general fund if, in fact, the projections for the new mining were according to projections? So we have a lot of projections about what that might look like. And if we're going to make any decision on this, it'd be very helpful to know, just using those assumptions, what this change would do to the amount of money coming to the general fund.
Senator Tomasoni, are there production estimates and revenue estimates available if these get scaled up and operational?
Well, I believe we probably could.
Senator Tomasoni?
Mr. Chairman, I believe we could probably figure that out. And I'm sure that after 8 years of doing an environmental impact statement and 2,200 pages of an environmental impact, they have some pretty good numbers on what's going to come out of there. The question is when, and when do they start mining? And so this is more than anything just an attempt to make sure that the distribution goes the same as the production tax on taconite goes. And so I'm open to making sure that everybody's comfortable with it.
And it's prospective.
Yes.
Senator Rest.
So, Mr. Chairman and Senator Tomasoni, so the rate you are proposing for non-ferrous mine would then be the same as they are for taconite?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Rest, the idea is that the way the money gets distributed is the same, okay?
In other words, there could be a
mine in one district, in one school district, and a concentrating plant in another school district, and they get under the production tax, they get apportioned out in a certain way. And it wasn't like that in law for the net proceeds tax, and we just wanted to make sure that worked the same.
Anything else, members? Anyone else wish to testify on Senate File 2941 as amended?
Mr. Chair, I just have a curiosity question. I don't know, for instance, and it's sort of scattered around here, but I'll just use, for instance, line 5-3 and line 5-2-8, where we, and there are even some occasions here where we go to the third decimal. Are some of these like changes based on some sort of a formula, or you know, how did, for instance, on 7.24, we get to the third decimal in terms of what that number should be?
Mr. Chairman,
is it just good thinking, or is it a formula?
Mr. Chairman, the people that came before me, I think, made it complicated enough so that not the people after me will never understand it either.
Okay.
But
Senator Senjum, the issue here is it's millions of tons, and mm-hmm. so a hundredth of a cent or a thousandth of a cent means money to these school districts.
Well, that helps when I think about those terms. Yeah.
And you know, there's some people that will tell you that the distribution should be done even differently than it is now, but trying to get the entire delegation to agree to it is always kind of an issue.
Okay. Thanks.
Senator Senjum, I've been trying to get them to do this in the IRRRB, which they could do. We wouldn't have to do this here. But anyway, we're not there yet, are we, David? Senator Thompson.
You never know.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, again, to some of this last discussion, again, I don't know what the magical number should be for how much goes to the schools, how much counties, how much the cities. I'm just concerned about the first two sections where you're taking it from the state and giving it to the local governments when we don't know what the costs, the benefits, everything else are. And it's easy to say it's not a big deal when there's no money in the box. But given the projections that there may be, I don't know if Department of Revenue, I don't know that we need to go into that now, but I just think my concern isn't with the other sections of what percentage goes to what revenue sharing system. It's just how much is going to the state and the local governments when we haven't no way of knowing anything
here. Mr. Chairman,
the only thing I would add, Senator Marty, is that from what I've been hearing, there are going to be more local impacts with non-ferrous than with the taconite industry, and perhaps the need is greater for the local area. Senator Marty.
And Mr. Chair, I agree. It may also be greater for the state at large, too, depending on who's responsible for the costs in the long run. So, which would go to the opposite of Senator Tomasoni's concern about minimizing the taxes on the mines. If the state has more costs and the local governments have more costs, then reducing the taxes, which you're not doing here, I understand, but it would be a problem. So my point is that, yes, they may have more costs there. We may have more costs at the state, but dealing with an empty box with unknown amount of money in and saying we're going to change the distribution of it now based on somebody's numbers is not a good way to do it, I'd argue.
Senator Tomasoni?
And Mr. Chairman, Senator Marty, I can't even tell you why 2.45% is in the bill or why it's being reduced to 1.45%. I'm not sure where any of those numbers came from or why they're there, but I do know that before any kind of permits to mine get given out, there's going to be guarantees made to the state by the mining company through the permit process and through the DNR, and they will be reviewed every single year to make sure that in the event there is some kind of environmental damage that needs to be cleaned up, that they will be they'll be paid for it, and it won't be on the taxpayers' dole. So that's why it's been taking as long as it has for us to get through this environmental impact statement process.
Anything else, members? Thank you, Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you.
We'll continue this discussion. Chair O'Leary, Senate File 2919 over for possible inclusion. As amended. Senator Dietzick. Senate File 2941. Welcome. Senator Dietzick.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. Senate File 2941 increases the June accelerated annual tax liability threshold from $120,000 to $250,000. Certain entities that owe the state sales and use tax and or excise taxes are required to accelerate remittance of the tax collected in June. This allows the state to recognize more revenue collected in the current fiscal year before the fiscal year closes on June 30th. This revenue shift was first used in the 1980s, and the state has adjusted the timing and the amount several times since then. This helps the state, but sometimes creates cash flow problems for small businesses. Raising the income threshold that triggers when the businesses must abide by the accelerated schedule from $120 to $250 could help about 2,500 smaller businesses. Thank you for your time and consideration, and I ask for your support, and we'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Senator Dietzick. So we're repaying one of the mechanisms we used during the downtimes by repaying one of the shifts. Questions, members? Anyone in the audience wish to testify on Senate File number 2941? Seeing no one, thank you, Senator Dietzick. Chair will lay over Senate File 2941 for possible inclusion. Senator Rest.
Thank you.
Senator Rest, Senate File 2934, and do you have an author's amendment?
Good morning. I do have an author's amendment. It is the A2.
Members, Senator Rest has the A2 amendment. It is in your packet. Senator Rest moves the A2 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The A2 is adopted. Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman and members, in 2011, we passed a sales tax exemption for data centers, and since that time we've been struggling to get it right. And we made some additional changes in it in 2013 in the bill last year, and following the enactment of the 2013 Omnibus tax bill, we discovered a number of other issues that needed to be clarified and corrected. And Senate File 2934, as amended, does exactly that with regard to some definitions and what can be counted toward meeting the threshold for the sales tax exemption and what cannot, and it also clarifies the effective dates of those provisions. We, if you look at the revenue estimate, the revenue Department of Revenue indicates that the impact is unknown, but we believe it to be minimal.
Thank you, and Senator Rest, this is making sure that the intent of what we did last year is being fulfilled.
The improvements that we made last year, that the that intent has been clarified here, so that the businesses that are engaged in data centers know exactly what their tax situation will be.
And the impact of that clarification is that the efforts that were done prior to the law change will be included in their qualifying numbers.
In some instances, not the computer software,
not
however.
The computer software.
It has to come after the effective date, if I understand the amendment correctly, and effective date of last year, and Ms. Pollack can correct me if I'm confusing that.
I believe you're correct, but Ms. Pollack.
Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, it's the computer software maintenance agreements.
Yes, okay. The maintenance agreements.
Any questions, members?
Yet another clarification.
Any questions, members? Anyone in the audience wish to testify on Senate File 2934? Anything else, Senator Rest?
No, sir.
Thank you, Senator Rest. Chair will lay Senate File number 2934 as amended over for possible inclusion. And to the public, I forgot to announce at the beginning of the meeting that Senator Schmidt has requested that we not hear Senate File 1828 today. So if you're here for that, apologize, I forgot to announce it earlier.
Senator,
you're welcome.
Senator Skoy brings us Senate File 2128, and I believe Senator Skoy, you have an author's amendment. Is that correct?
Well, Madam Chair, I've been in finance and.
So
I do have an amendment that I'd like to add.
This is a delete everything amendment, since this is not the first committee. Senator Skoy moves the amendment, but we need some explanation before we act on it. Senator Skoy.
And Madam Chair,
and it
members,
is the A4.
What this amendment is doing is clarifying that the intent is that the games that would not be allowed to be online. Sales of the lottery, and also that pay at the pump would not be allowed. But if there are vending machines or other electronic devices used to distribute lottery tickets, that those would be permitted.
And so Senator Skoy, could you maybe give some examples of then the ones that would still be permitted under your amendment?
There are evidently vending machines that sell lottery tickets. They're like a pop machine, I guess. I've never seen one myself. They could be in bars or grocery stores.
Airport.
Airport, yeah, there are four places, and I think, I don't remember the fourth one. But my intent in the bill is to address the online lottery sales and pay at the pump, and to not allow those, but the ongoing other facilities will remain allowed.
Are there questions on the A4 amendment?
Madam Chair.
Senator Marty.
Is the fiscal note, by the way, that's based on the original, the bill, not the, so the fiscal note would be smaller numbers.
Senator Scoy.
Madam Chair and Senator Marty, the fiscal note is for the A4 amendment, so it's current. No, I'm getting a nod. Ms. McQuay.
Ms. McQuay.
Madam Chair and members, the fiscal note is drawn to the bill as introduced, but I will, and the fiscal note is in process for the A4 amendment, but I'll just turn your attention to page 5 of the fiscal note. In the first full paragraph, includes the loss of the play at the pump. So the amendment, the A4 amendment, is seen as a clarifying amendment to the fiscal note, and so the fiscal note to the A4 will come to the committee as with the same numbers that are in the fiscal note that you have in front of you.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm wondering on Ms. McQuay's thing.
Senator Marty.
You are, in both of them, you're prohibiting it from the pay at the pump. It's the only thing you're getting rid of is the vending machines that are not online and not at the pump.
Not getting rid of those. Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Marty, what my expectation is, even though the fiscal note was drafted on the original bill draft, that it is the same as what is now proposed with the A4 amendment. The provisions that we removed with the A4 amendment were amended into the bill in state and local government, and we took those out here in the tax committee.
And, Madam Chair,
Ms. McQuay.
The assumption in the fiscal note in front of you assumes the loss of play at the pump, not and to sell web lottery tickets through the website. So it assumes that all those other vending machine type purchases are allowed. So the cost will not change.
So Ms. McQuay, the fiscal note did not take into account the changes that were made in the other committee. Is that what you're saying?
Madam Chair, further restrictions. That's correct. There was no fiscal note done while this bill was in process.
Right.
It was done
so
at the beginning.
So this returns it. The fiscal note returns it to what is understood in the A4 amendment. Is that fairly accurate, Senator Scoy?
Madam Chair, that is accurate. The A4 amendment returns the bill to the intent as drafted and what the fiscal note was
and
prepared
then it clarifies.
For. And it's just clarifying that that's the intent.
In the A4 amendment. Are there any other questions on the A4 amendment? Seeing none.
Madam Chair.
Senator Senjum.
Thank you. A question from the author. So a vending machine could be inside the convenience store with a gas pump, but it couldn't be next to the gas pump?
Or on is that, the gas pump.
Or on the gas pump, or is adjacent to the retail petroleum dispenser. It seems to me that would be next to the gas pump.
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Senjum,
Senator Scoy,
if it wasn't for the impact of cost, I would have continued with the not allowing of the vending machine types. Those have been around. They're in place. There's significant costs. But you are right. A convenience store, if they chose, could probably have a vending machine outside their store. It wouldn't be on top of the pump as the pay at the pump proposal is. There's a pilot project for pay at the pump that's around.
Madam Chair, just
Senator Senjum.
A curiosity question. Could a convenience store have a person conveniently situated near a gas pump making these available for people that might want to buy them?
Madam Chair and Senator Senjum, perhaps they could, but generally the convenience stores prefer that their customers come inside the store and purchase the stuff that they have inside. They think that's where their largest profit margin is.
Yeah. Thank you.
Further questions?
Well,
Senator Dietzick.
I have a question on the bill, not the amendment.
Okay, let's act on the amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Senator Skoyne.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, I'm not going to go into a long, detailed history of lottery in the state. I think most of you have been around long enough to recall that it came around in 1988. The voters approved. This does have a history of expansions been proposed, some by the lottery, some by others, that would utilize the lottery as a mechanism for authorizing a gaming expansion. Going back to 1991, when the lottery proposed Nintendo at-home lottery play, which legislators intervened, and that did not move forward. A number of other proposals through the years for gaming expansion in the state, going back to 95 slots and bars, which was defeated, 96, 97, an ongoing Racino discussion, 2004 state slot machine business, White Earth proposal, also a casino in the northern suburbs proposal with White Earth, Leech Lake, and Red Lake, riverboat gaming, Little Falls Racetrack, County Fair Racetracks, Representative Kahn's slots at airports, Block E Casino, Mall of America proposals, etc. In all of those instances, they did not move forward. The legislature has been involved in those discussions. But those were brick-and-mortar facilities where somebody actually had to get up and travel to them. This is, again, a proposal for people to play online at home. And I just don't think that was the intent of Minnesotans as this was moving forward. But that's not why we are here. The tax committee's charge is to deal with the potential loss to the general fund. There is, according to the revenue estimate, a loss going forward. There is also going to be a loss from a change in the contract. But when I look at this and the impacts that why this expansion is being proposed, it clearly is raising issue. If I could draw your attention to the first paragraph in the revenue estimate as prepared under assumptions. Toward the bottom of this, you read a notable decline in lottery participation among young adults. Among Minnesota adults between the age of 25 and 34, for example, lottery participation declined from 62% in 2004 to 50% in 2012. Loss of 38,000 customers in this age group alone. Unless this trend can be reversed, the decline in lottery sales and revenues to the state will continue. This is a perfect example of why we should not be funding general revenue expenses with gaming proceeds, because we become where they are necessary. And the way to fund these important things that the state does is through an expansion of gaming, which from my perspective is not a good direction. We shouldn't be required to need revenue from this source. And I cannot think of any good public policy decision that would be based on more gaming in the state of Minnesota. So hence, I'm bringing this proposal forward. I'm not involved in a discussion as to whether currently the lottery has authority or not, but if this does go forward, it would be clear that the director does not have the authority to do online gaming. And I would ask for your support.
There are people that are interested in testifying, but first, Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, Senator Skoyne, I'm glad you're bringing this forward. I think you're right. This is a revenue issue. It does cost the state money because we count on this, and I think Minnesota wasn't alone. We were one of most states that decided that we could get some easy money out of gambling. And just as some individuals have problems with problem gambling, we have state governments and so on, we get addicted to the money. And I think when you went through that history of all those things we've been adding over the years and we're not adding, you know, the online one is a lot more concerned that So I think that's really key. And I mean, this gets back to the whole issue of why we advertise this. I think you and I and lots of others have been saying, you know, if the state is going to have gambling opportunities, at least we shouldn't be promoting it. And, you know, the state of Minnesota, what are our values? I mean, we don't run state-funded ads to tell people to get a good education or work hard in life to make a success. We tell them buy a lottery ticket, and we keep making it easier. And I have real concern about the online issue, and I think you're right. I don't know whether they have the legal authority or not. I think this would clarify that they don't. I think the issue is, yeah, can we afford to do this? Well, it's always been seen as easy money, and it's not. And the more sales fall off, the more we try and find new ways to promote it and encourage it. So,
well, Senator Marty, I agree with the thrust of your statements, but I would point out that the lottery, unlike other agencies, if you will, does operate as an enterprise fund. And so, therefore, it has a business model and part of that is almost a fiduciary responsibility to make the public aware of the products that it offers. In addition, even though I support Senator Scoy's bill, the Minnesota Lottery just has a sterling reputation across the country in how it's run. And I know their leaders are here today, and I think they should know that regardless of how each of us may feel individually and as a legislator about gambling in general. And I say that as a purchaser of Powerball tickets. And I have won twice, $4 each.
Money ahead, Madam Chair.
Big money. Anyway, I just want to clarify that. And I know you did not mean to criticize the operation, but I think we need to make that clear.
Madam Chair, it's a good point. I think the previous lottery director and Mr. Feeney, who's been there for a long time and so on, and I think they do operate a clean operation and so on. And as you point out, they're trying to run their business. My problem isn't that. It's the whole idea that the state sets up a business like this to promote that.
And the voters approve that by a constitutional amendment. So I'll hear now from the director and from Mr. Feeney. Welcome to the committee. If you would identify yourself, please, for the record. Director Van Petten, do you want to begin?
Yes, Ed Van Petten, Executive Director of the Minnesota State Lottery. I did not prepare a prepared testimony today, but wanted to address this issue with you. I know there are genuine concerns, and I don't mean to diminish those in any way. This project has been in the works for about a year before I came to Minnesota. When I got here, there were legal opinions addressing the authority issues, and clearly we do have the authority to do this. A bigger concern was, should we do this? And there was research, a lot of research reviewed. Just so you know, Minnesota is the first state in the United States to sell instant tickets online. We are well beyond, there's probably over 75 jurisdictions worldwide that do this. Pretty much all of Europe, Canada, Australia, and many jurisdictions in Asia have this technology and have been using it for years. The United Kingdom has been selling instant tickets online since 2002. We have not found one research paper worldwide that even alleges the sale of instant tickets online contributes to problem gaming. There's just no evidence of it whatsoever. Mr. Feeney, who many of you know and I've known for years, is an immediate past president of the National Council on Problem Gaming. Served two terms. And Mr. Feeney told me in no uncertain terms, if he thinks we're doing anything at the Minnesota State Lottery that would contribute to additional problem gaming, he would quit. And I believe that. We have not done that. We will not do that. And this is an additional revenue source. It is an additional distribution channel. And we have been responsible in limiting the sales on this channel to $50 per week per individual. I guess the key to one of the terms we keep hearing is the fiscal note addresses young adults. Well, the key to me is the term adults. They are adults. Many people market to them. The most recent edition of the National Association of Convenience Store has a four-page article on how to attract the young adult market, the millennials, they call them. Everyone is marketing to them. And the channel that is utilized the most for marketing is the Internet. We have to have a presence on the Internet. We have brand awareness by sampling our product on the Internet, but we rely on our retail establishments. The other point that we've researched, in fact, was the effect on retail establishments. And there is not one jurisdiction worldwide that has introduced electronic instant tickets that has shown any effect on the retail market except to benefit it. And I know that it's almost counterintuitive to say that, but in the United Kingdom, in 4 years from 2006 to 2010, after the introduction of electronic instant tickets, the brick-and-mortar retail market was up over 21%. So I understand the fears. I do feel the fears are totally unfounded and that we should be allowed to go forward. But with that being said, I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Are there any comments or questions for Director Van Patten? Senator Sanjay.
Madam Chair and Director, just so I understand what you said, the ability to play these, at least in terms of limits, is governed through a password and through some electronic threshold that you can't exceed $50 a week. Is that right?
Director?
Madam Chair, Senator. That's correct, sir.
Okay.
Each account is monitored from Sunday morning through Saturday night. The system is down briefly, and that account is reset on Sunday mornings.
Okay.
But it's $50 per calendar week, I guess you would call it.
Thank you.
Senator DJ.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank both of you for testifying, and I will agree with the rest of those. I do play Powerball and have been known to buy scratch-offs. I did the lottery bill yesterday, or the LCCMR bill yesterday, which we are spending about $29 million to help improve the environment. And so I there's a lot of good there that we are proposing in that LCCMR bill. But my question and concerns are, and I'll agree with Senator Russ that it's a very well-run lottery, and I know the staff works hard, so I'm not questioning them. But my question in this revenue estimate is, it says that you're going to be required to reimburse the vendor for costs incurred terminating this program, and it assumes a $2.5 million cost. So when these contracts were set up, and my understanding in listening to and remembering what I've been reading, some of these were still trial runs. And so in the contract with vendors, did we not have something in there in case the legislature decided that this isn't permissible? Is there, when I've done contracts before, I think it's called, act of God or force majeure, and then you would think, because just based on as Senator Skoy went through all the discussions we've had at the legislature in the past, I'm assuming you realize that we might have some questions when this first came out, and I know I think instantaneously there were questions. Were there any discussions with anybody at the legislature on is there going to be questions, and then is there language in the contracts that say, you know, this may change if the legislature decides not to do it, and does the vendor know that, and then who pays for this? Because I don't know if we should be paying for that loss when there would, you know, should have been some concern on if the legislature would have concerned and outlawed this in the first place.
Madam Chair, Senator.
Director Van Etten.
Those thoughts were presented. At the time, we were working with two major vendors, GTEC Corporation and Scientific Games International, probably the two largest gaming companies in the world. Both of their legal staffs reviewed the state of Minnesota law and concluded without a doubt that we had the authority to act. There is a force majeure clause in our contract with Scientific Games, the company that is running our online gaming or online sales, and it is a question mark. We have reviewed it. It could be argued both ways, whether we are, you know, whether they could address this or not. I'll be honest. My guess is there would be litigation and expensive litigation regarding the fact, but they do have approximately $2.5 to $3 million invested.
Senator Dietzig?
Madam Chair, thank you. To follow up on that, I mean, that again just concerns me because based on the history of just anything that was even closely reviewed or considered expansion of gambling here in the state, the legislature's always, you know, at least from my recollection, there's been a lot of discussion over here at the legislature, and so I don't know why that contract would have moved forward without somebody checking and saying, you know, you said that the vendors didn't think that you needed approval. Did the AG look at this? And again, did you talk with anybody in the legislature to say, is this going to be a problem, or ask if this was going to be a problem?
Director Van Etten.
Madam Chair, Senator, the Attorney General has declined to review the matter. In-house counsel or general counsel at the lottery at that time, Dale McDonald, did review the law, also issued a memorandum to the effect that we or the lottery did have the authority to go forward. I'll fall on my sword here. I'm somewhat new to Minnesota politics, but if an agency clearly has the authority to act, I've never seen an agency then go back to the legislature and ask for authority to act if they already have that authority. And clearly that authority was granted in 1989 when this law was drafted. So I guess, no, we did not go to the legislature to ask for further authority. I felt like we did keep the chairs of our oversight committees informed of what we were doing at the time.
Madam Chair.
Senator Dietzig.
Okay, thank you. And so, again, getting back to this, so the do you know how much you've made in the last few weeks, and then how did you come up with these projections? Because they are, you know, just projections. And so, again, in here it talks about the amount of money that we're going to lose, you know, based on either paying for the removing and terminating the contracts, but what were some of the assumptions used, or how did you come up with these projections?
Director Van Etten.
Senator, they are estimates, obviously, but the estimates for the electronic instant tickets, at this point we are selling about $4,300 per day. So we feel like those estimates have been pretty much right on spot. We are not up to full scale by any means. The play at the pump revenue has to be an estimate. No one in the world has done that yet. But we base that estimated on the number of contacts per day at the locations that are in the pilot programs that we have going right now. So And Mr. Feeney actually drafted that, if you would like him to address that point further.
Mr. Feeney, welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself, please.
Madam Chair, Don Feeney, Research and Planning Director, Minnesota State Lottery. Madam Chair, and Senator Dietzick, one of the items that we did look at in preparing those estimates was the experience with Internet sales of lottery products in other jurisdictions around the world, particularly the United Kingdom and British Columbia, where their sales have been, I would say, not earth-shattering, but significant. We also took into account the experience in those jurisdictions of increases in sales at brick-and-mortar establishments when Internet sales are introduced, which, as Director Van Petten said, sounds strange, but it's roughly along the lines of the sports team owners who said, if you put the games on TV, nobody will come to the stadium, which is, we know, doesn't happen. Basically, it raises awareness. So those were the factors that entered into those revenue estimates, primarily performance outside of the U.S.
Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Director. I just happened to Google up a Washington Post article that said at least 10 other states are considering this modality, which I didn't know about until yesterday, this legislative year. Iowa happens to be one of them, just incidentally. But if we do this, and there may be a hometown feeling amongst people in Minnesota that are using the Minnesota website, but it certainly doesn't preclude any Minnesotan from jumping to another state, does it, in terms of where they might, even on this phone, do some online gambling? I mean, there are no limits to this, are there? That, for instance, Iowa does it. You're not limited to be an Iowa resident to use it. Is that correct?
Director.
Madam Chair, Senator, there are federal requirements for geolocation. The person who is placing or making the purchase online must be located in the state selling that product.
Okay. So I wasn't aware.
So
okay.
At this time, you have to be located in the state of Minnesota to make a purchase on our subscription site.
Okay.
We do have a number of subscribers from other states, but they have to be in the state of Minnesota at the time they make a transaction.
Okay. Madam Chair, would that just be true of a Canadian site or a Mexican site or a German site?
If they are a regulated site, yes, but that's the problem. There are, in fact, we Googled the term play poker in Minnesota, and five sites came up that said openly that Minnesotans can easily play poker on these sites. They're unregulated offshore sites that are illegal in the state or in the United States and in the state of Minnesota, but are readily available to our citizens. And they, as I said, they are not regulated. They allow credit card sales, whereas, as I'm sure all of you know, the state of Minnesota does not allow credit cards for the purchase of lottery tickets. We do allow a debit card and ACH transfers on our website. However, there are many illegal sites available out there. But if there are government-regulated sites, there are geolocation requirements as well as age verification requirements.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Sure. Senator Scoy, did you have a further comment?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And as I listen to the discussion, I think back to when the lottery first came around, and what we just heard is a perfect example. Well, gaming is going on, so Minnesota should be part of it. Still doesn't answer the question of what good public policy there is in that. And when I think about the authority that Director Van Patten indicates they received in 1989, I would have thought that the lottery would have looked at some of the history of the relation between the lottery and the legislature, including the 1991 discussion about whether we would have people playing lottery on Nintendo games at home. Clearly, the legislature didn't want that and didn't move forward. at the very least, there should have been more conversation with the legislature. I attended the hearing that occurred prior to session. I was astounded at what I heard. And hence, this is the result of that. I think with regard to the revenue estimate, that if these vendors are planning on doing business with Minnesota in the future, they would pay close attention to these charges that they're planning on litigating. And the last thing I'd like to say is, you know, it's probably good to be first in the nation for Minnesota in a lot of things, but from my perspective, this being first in the nation with online gaming, the only ones in the country, to the world, to do pay at the pump, I just don't think that's a good direction to be heading. I just can't get there.
Any further discussion? Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to thank Senator Scoy for bringing this forward. My bill was to put a moratorium on it and do a study, but I am quite happy with your bill. So thank you.
Is there a further discussion? Senator Dietzick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This gets back to the question on the litigation, potential litigation, and the cost, and even just the cost to, I think it's $2.5 million. That if we stop doing this, if I remember right, reading somewhere, the lottery did make money in 2012 and may have even returned some money to the state in 2012. Is that correct? And do you have operating dollars to cover the cost of litigation, if there is any?
Director,
Senator, we do not have the money budgeted for this expense. But, yes, we did return money. FY13, I believe we transferred about $135 million to the state. And we do have an operating budget of approximately 3% of our sales, I believe, which last year were $560 million. So is the money there? Probably. But, you know, it would reduce transfers, obviously.
Mr. Feeney?
Madam Chair, Senator Dietzick, let me just clarify on that. The way the lottery budget works, we do not receive an appropriation from the state. Essentially, we are self-funded. The result is that anything that is not spent on operations below budget falls to the bottom line, falls to the beneficiaries. Anything additional that is spent detracts from those beneficiaries. So it's just a one-to-one correspondence.
Further discussion? Seeing none, the chair will lay over.
Madam Chair, this is to go to the floor.
Beg pardon?
This Senate file is to be voted on and go to the floor.
To be go to Senator Scoy moves that Senate file 2128 be as amended be recommended to pass. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you very much, Senator Scoy, and the bill will be sent to Senate floor. Is there further business? Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, Monday, 9 a.m., we are going to hear a couple of bills that currently are on the list. Senator Metzen's bill dealing with Dakota County Community Development, Senator Coonan's bill dealing with a solar energy production tax. If there are other bills members would like heard, we could contemplate that, but we're also thinking that we will be rolling out Tax Bill 2 on Monday. So we'll see how the agenda develops, and we'll post as soon as
we know. I'll just repeat that since there's some noise out there. We're going to hear a few more bills on Monday morning, and then we'll also be releasing the chair's mark on Tax Bill 2, and we'll be acting on it in during the rest of the week. So that will be Monday morning at 9 o'clock.
That's it.
Possibly releasing it, but we're working hard to meet that deadline on ourselves. Committee is adjourned.